Census Bureau numbers keep telling us about the nation and keep telling us about Wisconsin. There's been a recent raft of numbers released about the state of Wisconsin and how we've changed in the period 2000 to 2010. So I've asked Catherine Curtis, an assistant professor from the UW-Madison Sociology Department, specializing in community and environmental sociology. Catherine, thanks. You have been wading through numbers. Are you like a kid in a candy store now with all these numbers and all the changes?
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be a demographer, to be sure.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. This is your first appearance on Wisconsin Eye. I want to thank you for coming. Now, to make this understandable, because you do this for a living and I don't, we've developed 11 charts. So we're going to take as much time as we need to walk slowly for my benefit through these 11 charts. Are you ready?
I am.
All right. Let's start with Wisconsin's population grew in 2000 to 2010 by 5.7%. Now, that compares to 8.8% the United States. Is 5.7 good, average, not good?
Well, it's not bad,
okay.
But it is below the average, right, represented by the 8.8% across the U.S. And so what that means is that the state is still continuing to grow, but at a pretty slow rate. And it's in the next graph that I think that we learn more about what's been happening in Wisconsin.
Well, how do we compare? How did our 5.7 compare to our neighbors? Do you know? And if you don't, we'll just go to the next.
We'll just go to the next.
Okay, fine. Then this is intriguing. Well, the first thing my non-expert eye saw is this is the second lowest growth rate in the last 50 years. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Why?
Well, these data don't permit us exactly to address that question, but what they suggest in looking at the historical trends, thinking back from 1960 through 2010, the decades that the most recent one looks most similar to are the periods of change in the 1970s and in the 1980s. And these were the periods of what we've come to know as deindustrialization in the United States, especially in the northern, midwestern, and northeastern states.
Deindustrialization. Right. What does that mean?
So what that is it's a period of economic decline or contraction, especially in the manufacturing industries that were concentrated in this part of the country.
Wisconsin has had the first or second highest number of manufacturing jobs. Excuse me for interrupting you.
Right. It's a big part of the industry. It's a major industry in the state, along with agriculture and tourism.
Okay.
And so when the manufacturing industry is affected, it definitely affects the state of Wisconsin. And so while, again, these data don't permit us to draw causal linkages, what they do suggest is that the rate of population change that we've witnessed during the 2000s is on par with what we saw in the 1970s and 1980s. And it's worth noting that in the 2000s, we experienced two recessions, a smaller one in the early 2000s and a much bigger one in the later 2000s. And so it's not surprising that we would see this decline, a decline in the growth rate.
Do professionals like you see 6% as healthy, give it a passing grade, or not too healthy?
Well, for me, I look basically at what's been happening in recent years to try to get a sense of what might be reasonable for this particular case, this particular geography. And so compared to the growth of the 50s and 60s, it's not comparable, or even the growth that we witnessed in the 1990s. So we're not at our top performance in terms of growth. But we're not quite at our lowest in the 50s, which is what was which we observed in the 1980s.
So would you give us a C for the period 2000 to 2010?
I tend to grade kind of high.
Thank you. All right, then let's look at the percentage change by counties. Tell me about this chart, this graphic.
Yeah, what we're looking at here is the percentage change, not the actual number of change, but the percentage change.
Right.
What we saw is a range. Some counties actually lost 14% of their population relative to where they started in 2000.
And those would be which ones?
And
biggest
those,
losers?
The red ones, right? And they're highly concentrated in the northern part of the state.
That's Price, Iron.
Price, Iron, Florence, Forest, and Menominee counties.
What happened in those counties, do you think?
Well, what happened, these are all of them are rural counties. And across the United States, rural counties, every census, I think, eagerly look for the numbers to see what's been going on. And what has been facing most rural counties in the United States is an out-migration of the young population. Okay. And we see some evidence a little later on. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
Because there are three ways that a population grows, and it's that it can change. And one is mortality, then fertility, and migration. So the rate that people die, the rate that people are born, and the rate that people are moving around. And so when we see a loss in the United States, it's probably not, in the contemporary United States, it's not an issue of dramatic change in mortality, but through migration and a combination of migration and fertility, that's usually where we see our change. So when we look at these counties that are experiencing loss, I almost immediately think, well, what's the age structure there? Because it's very likely that we're just not having fertility replacing the population, or we're experiencing an out-migration, but not enough in-migration to compensate for that, for the out-migration.
Well, we've talked about the counties that lost on a percentage basis the most. Mm-hmm. What strikes you about the counties that are fastest growing, if anything?
Well, the fastest growing ones, they are mostly urban places, mm-hmm. or urban counties, or are ex-urban counties. And that's what we see with St. Croix and with Calumet counties. So these are places that aren't necessarily homes to large metropolitan areas, but they're near. And it's another pattern that we see across the United States, where there's a lot of growth in the cities or the suburbs, and then one more step removed from that city center.
St. Croix, these are people who most likely work in the cities.
Right, and we think about, again, this map ends at Wisconsin, but we know that we don't float in space and are surrounded on that border by Minnesota, so the St. Paul, Minneapolis area there.
Okay, so just to summarize this final point, mm-hmm. most of our counties grew at a rate of what, 5 to 14%?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fair? Okay.
That's fair.
All right, and then this is the actual numbers, change in population. Anything jump out at you here?
Well, what's nice about this image, again, when we think about the percentage change, that's relative to where we started. And this image just shows us the number of people that are moving in. And so we see that there were the actual number of losses, and then the actual number of gains. And Dane County is at the top there, where we had over 60,000 people move in, which is a 14 percentage point increase.
Wow, 60,000, 14 percentage point gain in 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Well,
is it where you work and the place I cover in the Capitol? I mean, is it things like that or
within
quality of life?
It can be a lot of it. When we think about migration, there are major points in people's lives. And again, this is where age becomes important. Mm-hmm. We move for education and we move for occupations. So we move for opportunity, typically. And so when we think about what's been happening within Dane County, we know that the city of Madison and we know that Sun Prairie have experienced pretty dramatic increase in their populations.
Sun Prairie has been one of the fastest growing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Any PSs on this? Excuse me?
PSs on this is, again, just thinking about the other places that experienced a lot of growth. So Dane County was one of the top ones. Waukesha County and Brown County were also pretty rapid growth. Mm-hmm. And, again, these are places that house metropolitan areas that have been growing.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get, boy, now we begin to really slice it some ways here.
Yeah.
Housing vacancy. You know, when you and I talked, this I found this just so amazing, because if the chart on the right, this shows you have about 12 northern counties. Am I reading this right, Catherine? 35 to 62% of the housing units are vacant. Are these second homes? Are these what are they?
In combination, so what the vacancy rate is it's a combination of either places that are only sometimes occupied or they're not at all occupied. And the census is taken on a particular day. So it's referred to that day in April and whether there was anybody living within that housing unit. And so what's reflected in this number is that, either nobody was there because they live there a different time of the year, or nobody's living there at all. And they are the higher vacancy rates are concentrated in the northern part of the state. And we know that the northern part of the state is a recreational
summer home area.
But we also know from the previous images that those are counties that have also been experiencing population loss. So while traditionally I think that it is a safe bet to say that those are largely seasonal homes, mm-hmm. But not exclusively.
And then the chart on the left here, this is the biggest percentage gain in vacant housing.
Correct.
And any surprises there? Price, Taylor, mm-hmm. Rusk?
Well, I again just want to point out that those are highly concentrated in the northern part of the state, which are typically, again, home to seasonal housing. And what we're seeing is an increase in the housing vacancy rate. So in the past census, it was also asking in reference to a particular date in April. And what we're seeing is that the vacancy rate has increased. So again, pointing to, well, is it that people are not occupying that place later? Is it an increase in the number of seasonal homes?
Right.
Very likely, or is it an increase in permanently vacant or year-round vacant homes?
You may not know, but do other states in the Midwest, do you think, have skew the same way in terms of vacant housing? Do they really?
Yeah, I think in the upper Midwest. I think Minnesota is one that comes to mind.
Northern Minnesota would have... would look essentially like this, do you think?
I think that if I'm understanding the question correctly, yeah, when you're looking at places with recreation, tourism type of economic bases, that's when you'll start to see things like this, where you have basically a high turnover in the population around the year, so a seasonal population, whether that's seasonal for recreation or seasonal for employment. You'll see this type of behavior.
Is this a healthy trend or?
Just fine.
Just fine? Thank you. Percentage change in Hispanic population. Now, I know one of your specialties is watching the changes in Wisconsin's Hispanic population. So this is all yours. Take it away. What are we looking at and why is it significant?
Okay. What we're looking at in this image that actually has two maps,
yes.
Is we're seeing that the Hispanic population in Wisconsin has increased. It increased by 74%, and as we talked about earlier, that's a pretty dramatic change.
74%.
It is on par with the surrounding states.
It is.
And the important thing to keep in mind is whenever we're hearing about or reading about percentage change is it again refers to that population base.
Yes.
And so when you have a small
number,
it's much easier to increase by 100% when there is one,
yes.
Versus 100,000. Exactly.
Yes.
So we're seeing some evidence of this, but what's more important for me is, again, to think about where this is happening. So breaking it down to the county level, it starts to communicate that for us.
Now, are you on the chart on the left or the right?
So looking, well, we can start with the one on the left, and
okay.
That's the percentage change. What we see is there was one county that lost Hispanic population. That's Iron County up in the north. But all other counties grew in their Hispanic population. And there is some geographic clustering of where our high concentration of growth was centered. But then moving to the right-hand image, mm-hmm. We see this is the actual population, the actual Hispanic population as a percentage of the total county population. And what I want to point out is that the highest number is 14%. So every population, right, we have 100%. And of that, 14% is the highest that we would see, and it's
the highest number of Hispanics in any one county.
In any one county in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, just to be sure I understand, mm-hmm. aren't the number of Hispanic residents in Wisconsin went up 74% between 2000 and 2010.
Correct.
What percentage, though, of the 5.6 are Hispanics? Do you know?
Of the total population, I don't know that.
I'm playing stump the prof, and I get a
and
point.
And you won.
I won. Okay, but I'm sorry. You were not done with
fine.
the image on the right.
Well, with the image on the right, what I wanted to point out is that our places that have the highest concentration of Hispanic population are in that traditional location, meaning the Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha area, mm-hmm. and then spreading to the Walworth and Rock area.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of a historic pattern. Going as far back as to the early 1900s or mid-1900s with the Bracero program. And it's also a continued movement when we think about the southern border, and that's with Illinois, which traditionally has a large and diverse population. And so part of the story of the Hispanic population is what we in the business call chain migration. And so,
it's a lovely term,
isn't it?
Yes, explain it.
And so, what that means is you might have a permanent settlement in one location, and eventually, there's outward migration. And you can think about that across any geographic scale, even the United States history of development, where we started in the East and eventually, right, moved further west. And so when we think about, when we look at this right-hand image, what we're seeing is still a high concentration in the southeastern part of the state, and then this movement out to the northern part and to the more western part. And when we look at it in tandem with the percentage change image on the left-hand side, mm-hmm. we see where there's a lot of change. Mm-hmm. But again, a lot of change is subject to a small number to begin
small
with.
Base number.
Exactly.
Hispanics in Wisconsin, are they families with one or two kids, or is that an unfair question?
It's not an unfair question. These data we can't yet answer. Well, we can start to answer that with the child population. The Hispanic population in Wisconsin is pretty diverse. I think that there are a lot of ideas, a lot of images, and a lot of them are singular when we talk about the Hispanic population. But I do think it is important to keep in mind the diversity, which is to say not all Hispanics are recent in-migrants from foreign countries. Okay. That we do in the state have a pretty long history of a Hispanic population. And those who are coming in migrants, aren't all from Mexico, as an example.
That's what I was going to ask.
But we're seeing both South America and Central America. Again, these data, we're not quite able to talk about that, but thinking about the other data that are available to us through the Census Bureau,
do you think most of the growth in the Hispanics in Wisconsin, they're coming from other countries, from South America, as opposed to shifting from other parts of the United States?
It's a combination, and these data don't let us say that. We're working on generating data that actually permit us to track county flows, people across counties to be able to answer those questions. But a couple of things that I do want to point out is that the Hispanic growth, like all the three ways that a population can change, the Hispanic population is in combination with migration and fertility. Mm-hmm. So there's those two mechanisms are how we see a large increase in the Hispanic population. And again, just pointing out that there's considerable growth in a lot of the rural communities or rural counties in the state.
Yes.
That's in part due to, again, the small base number that we're referring to in 2000. But then there's also been a lot of attention given to the Hispanic labor.
Yes.
In dairy industry.
Right.
Again, the agricultural industry in Wisconsin.
Yep, that's been
and
documented.
That's a really fascinating story, an
Clark,
important story.
Clark, Trempealeau, Iowa, Lafayette counties.
Yes, yeah. Very fascinating story to consider in combination with the out-migration of other race groups, like the non-Hispanic white population from rural areas.
Wow, so. 74% upper mm-hmm. the number of Hispanics, 10-year
yeah.
period.
Yeah.
African-American change?
Yeah, the African-American change. So what these numbers reflect are black or African-Americans in the state of Wisconsin. It's the similar layout as with the Hispanic population, where on the left-hand side we see the percentage change.
Mm-hmm. Within that 10-year period, yes.
Within that 10-year period, exactly. Percentage change between 2000 and 2010. And then on the right-hand side, it's the actual proportion of the total county population. So thinking about the total population, we see that there's considerable concentration in the black population, and that's in more urban places, urban locations, historically and still today, Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha area, and Dane County.
Two counties that have been hit hard by the recession. Excuse
right.
me for interrupting.
Very much so. And that's actually an important piece these data don't address, but in terms of my own interest in thinking about economic vulnerability in different populations.
Mm-hmm.
The occupational segregation, or where different race and ethnic groups tend to be located in the occupational structure.
Right.
And so this has a really important implication for understanding those dynamics. What we are seeing in the state in terms of the growth, right, so those very dark, bright blue
yes.
Counties on the left-hand-sided map, we see growth rates of upwards 200 to over 1,000%. Again, that has to do with a very small base population, but it also reflects a lot of the racial disparity in the correctional.
Some of these counties, there's prison there, reflecting
yes.
the disparity in our prison population.
Yes, well, yeah, which a lot of researchers and social justice advocates are very interested and engaged in. And the way that the census works is that the institutionalized population is counted in the location of the institution, another highly contested part of the census.
Yes.
But so when we think about the location of the African American and Black population, that's not the only story, but it's certainly a part of the story in rural counties in Wisconsin.
A question while it occurs to me, if our Hispanic population grew 74%, what did our African American population
African American grew by 18%.
18%.
So 55,000, just under 55,000.
Okay, and is that pretty much on par with our neighbors in the Midwest, do you believe?
I believe it is, but I do want to put that 55,000 in reference to the Hispanic population, which was over, 140,000.
140,000 equaled the 74% increase in Hispanics.
Correct.
55,000 equaled the 18% growth in African Americans.
Right.
Thank
right.
you. Okay. This measures the white population?
It does.
All right.
Right. So what we on the street call the white population is what is reflected in the census data.
Yes.
by nerds such as myself as the non-Hispanic white population.
By demographers.
By demographers,
okay.
Yes. So demographers, the demographic term is the non-Hispanic white. And I do want to point out that in the census, for those who are looking at census data, Hispanic is not considered a race, it's an ethnicity. So thinking about these things is, I think, important. So looking at the non-Hispanic white population, why I wanted to bring this up, or what I think is important about this, is despite all of the change, all of the growth in the Hispanic population, as well as in the African American population, the state remains predominantly majority white, and that's true across the state.
Is there a number, the number of Wisconsin residents that are white?
Oh.
Have I stumped you again?
You have stumped me. I don't
okay,
know that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's 90-some percent.
91, 92, somewhere in there?
Okay. Very much so, yeah. Vast majority white.
So do we have counties that are becoming, for want of a better term, whiter?
I wouldn't say. We have very few that are becoming whiter.
Okay.
But and so looking at, these two maps, the one on the left-hand side is the percentage change. And so this is the loss of the non-Hispanic white population. And presumably what that means is that percentage has been replaced by another group.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a loss. Although when looking at it in tandem with the image on the right-hand side, we see that Iron County, as an example, is one that lost non-Hispanic white population. But it's still one of the high white counties. In that 92% to 98%.
Yes, Iron is.
Correct.
Right.
And okay. So the only county where whites were not the majority population was Menominee County, which is a tribal county.
Yes.
But after that, the most diverse, is another way of thinking about it, racially and ethnically diverse population was Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha, again, are historically urbanized, diverse
yes.
areas.
Yes, which goes back to some of the job opportunities they've had, but the manufacturing jobs that they've lost,
mm-hmm.
yeah, in that mm-hmm. southeast Wisconsin.
Right.
Oh.
So, and I do want to point out that where we see a higher concentration of the white population is in our more rural counties, although those aren't necessarily concentrated in
Very
geography.
Very good. Next one, please. Percentage change in population, age 17, and this measures what?
This gives us an indication.
Youth movement.
What's been happening with children? So people under the age of 18. Right now, we only are able to look at data that differentiate between the child population and the adult population, two very broad groups.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the year, by mid or the end of June, we will have data that will enable us to speak about specific age groups. So our retirement age group, as
yes.
an example, versus our working age group, where now we have them all put together. But here what we're looking at is the population in Wisconsin age 17 and under. And so what we see is that in general, Wisconsin's total child population declined. But that's not true of all places. But on average, places declined. We see the decline is concentrated in the northern part of the state. This is the part of the state where we often think about aging populations, and whether it's aging in aging in place, meaning working age families leaving, and therefore not the fertility dynamic falls out.
Yes.
And also an in-migration of older populations because of retirement. And recreational aspects, right? The amenities, the very amenity-rich northern part of the state. Whereas we see growth in the child population in some of our more urban and ex-urban
Our youngest areas. Counties are what? Dane?
Dane, St. Croix, and Calumet counties.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right. What this is what this story is a part of is also the movement of our baby boomers. We're still, as demographers, seeing the effects of the baby boom. And what's happened is that the children of the baby boomers have now moved. And we also know that the boom was followed by the bust.
Yes.
And so boomers had fewer children. Than obviously their parents had.
There's some fascinating stuff here.
There is, yeah. But one, the next slide is still a continuation of the child story.
Yes.
Which is that this overall decline in the child population was mediated by growth in the Hispanic population. And so here what we're looking at is an image that looks strikingly similar to the total Hispanic population that we saw a few minutes ago. But this is just the child population exclusively. And why I think it's nice to look at this again is to get an understanding of the geographic distribution of the population, but it's also an indication of permanent settlement, so that fertility story versus a seasonal mm-hmm. population, part of the Hispanic migration story. And what we're seeing evidence of is a more permanent family settlement in the state of Wisconsin.
So are the am I reading this right? On the right-hand image, mm-hmm. the youngest Hispanic families are in that southeast Wisconsin,
right.
Walworth, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's where we have our highest concentration, where the child population, so just looking at the child population,
yes.
15 to 21% are comprised of Hispanic children.
And as somebody, again, who specializes in Hispanics, is there any major takeaways for you from this?
Just the increase in diversity,
okay.
I think, is really important. Part of the story, even though we're seeing the bright purple part in the urban areas, part of the story in Wisconsin is thinking about schools and school enrollments in rural areas. We saw this in the 1990s, and we're still, I think, seeing some of it here in the 2000s, is that rural schools are basically staying open due to the increase in the Hispanic population.
Oh, my.
And that was
They're making
that
a difference
a
between closing and consolidating schools, the Hispanic population.
Mm-hmm. And that got a lot of attention with the 2000, when the 2000 census data came out. And I think we're going to be able to more clearly address that question when we have the specific aged information.
Okay.
But one of the big differences, at census 2000, only 5.5% of Wisconsin's children were identified as Hispanic. And in 2010, just over 10%. Oh. Children are identified as Hispanic.
Doubled for all intents and purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fascinating. And then the next one, next slide.
Yeah.
This Wisconsin population reporting 2+ races. What does that mean, reporting 2+ races?
So 2+ races. Since 2000, the census has enabled us to, as American citizens, acknowledge our racial diversity in this country. And in the state in Wisconsin. And so there's a growing number of people who cannot fully identify as a single race.
Right.
And by 2000, we formally acknowledged that in the census. And so what we're seeing here is people can report that they're not only one race, but two races. And usually, how does this happen? Because there's an increase in intermarriages.
Yes.
And they've been increasing throughout the century. And into this century in the United States as race relations change here.
Well, now, you said that Hispanic is not considered a race for this purpose?
No.
So what? We've had a rather dramatic increase, 51,000 to 79,000.
We have.
What are we seeing people self-disclosing?
So what we see, there are actually two big groups where this can come into play, African-American population and the American Indian population. But in the state of Wisconsin, why I want to point out the African-American part is In the national climate, and true in Wisconsin, there's always the question of, so who's our largest minority group?
Yes.
And in some ways, we can think that if we think about Hispanics as a minority group, again, that complexity of ethnicity versus race, we might think of the Hispanic group as the largest minority group. But when we start to think about the complexity or the diversity within race, we actually see that the African American or black population is still our largest minority population, in part because we're acknowledging the multitude of races
yes.
that individuals identify themselves. And so what we're seeing, what we saw in 2000 and what we've seen in 2010 is an increasing number of people are identifying as two or more races, and it's typically African American.
Hmm.
Now, what this means, this is a little difficult to get a handle on, is it could mean that people are becoming more accustomed to and familiar with identifying with their complex multicultural and multiracial identity.
Sure.
Or it could mean that there's an increase in intermarriage. And so we need, you know, additional data to supplement this. But what it does suggest is that it's on the rise, that the diversity and the complexity of race and racial identity.
Well,
something that Wisconsinites experience.
All this is fascinating. Let me ask a dumb question. Why does all this matter? And I know. Don't come across the table. No, I know it matters in terms of how much federal aid is returned and things like that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the future, the current and future fabric of our state, why do all these numbers mm-hmm. matter? I love them. They're fascinating. But mm-hmm. tell me the bottom line.
Well, I think it matters to everyone, and it matters differently depending on who you are. But as a community member, it matters because you're understanding what your community is and who are the members in your community. For those who are interested in programming, right, this is how you identify your target audience. It's a basic step in a needs assessment, identifying, again, who is the community that I'm trying to serve. What are the basic dimensions here, meaning how big is the community? Is it growing or is it declining? Because those are different needs entirely. And is it growing among the more aged or is it growing among the young?
Because they have different needs.
Because they
healthcare
have different
needs. Education needs.
Exactly. And then the race ethnicity dimension is also really important as an American society in terms of thinking about race relations and whether they're improving or whether they might be declining.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we move into the academic realm, of course, they're tied up in those needs assessments as well, and thinking about how the Wisconsin society and American society are changing.
Is there any major, maybe final question because we're almost out of time, is there any major batch of data that you want to see next that's going to come next? I mean, what has all the data been released for Wisconsin?
No.
What's still out there that has you just... delighted.
Waiting in anticipation. I alluded to it earlier, and that's the age-specific breakdowns.
Okay.
That's when we will be able to actually speak in more specific terms beyond child and adult population and get into the nitty-gritty, where we're able to see the very young, so the 0 to 5 age group, for example, as well as our very old, and separate out our college age group from our working age group. And that's when we can again start to be more specific in understanding who comprises our communities.
And when is that data going to come?
Hopefully by the end of June.
End of June?
Yeah.
Will you come back and explain it to us as well as you did this batch of data?
Maybe even better.
Professor Catherine Curtis, thanks so much for coming in and talking about Wisconsin as we now know it from the 2010 census. Thank you.
Thanks, my pleasure.